What does one say on the 23rd Easter sermon? You use don't do real well with Easter. We don't believe that anyone should or did die for our sins. We do not believe in miracles, which includes rising from the dead. And we have absolutely no interest in Jesus coming back. So, what do we do with Easter? There's only been two times in my ministry that I have sung the hymn, Jesus Christ Has Risen Again, Risen Today. One was in a very Christian UU church in West Hartford, Connecticut, where it was required, all three services. And once was in Bangor, Maine, but I was the settled minister in Bangor, so I had eight Easters to lead up to that moment. And I figured by the eighth year I'd said enough that I could actually encourage them to sing that song, and it worked. One of the things I know about Christian holidays and Unitarian Universalists, that we are surrounded communally in a Christian-dominated society by all the trappings, all those pieces of Easter, pieces of holidays, that they either inspire our resistance and we just get sort of about it, or they can inspire us to reflect on what are those symbols and those myths about anyways. If we allow our humanist or our atheist or our Buddhist, whatever practice we follow, to inspire resistance to those Christian myths, we run the risk of missing something, something important. Because in almost all of the religious holidays, there is a universal truth that's there, whether it is a pagan story about Esther, or Roman gods, or Christian gods, Buddhists, the stories of religion are for humanity, are to inspire something in us. I think Easter is about that great myth, the archetype, the hero's journey to maturity and inner peace. The journey of heroes is about self-sacrifice, leaving personal comfort because they have discovered there is something more relevant to living and dying than being comfortable. Joseph Campbell defines a hero as someone who has given his or her life to something bigger than self. And he's really specific about the word to, not for. And I think that's because heroism is not about dying for something. It's about living for something. Jesus, Martin Luther King, Franklin Roosevelt, Amelia Earhart, Gandhi, Malcolm X, the list goes on. Heroes, not because of their dying, but because of their living. Each hero that I can think of lived by extending themselves, risking unequivocally their status, their safety, their money, life itself, for some selfless conviction. Joseph Campbell says, to die without regret, we each have to find what best fosters that flowering of our humanity in this contemporary life, and then dedicate ourselves to it. Jesus, Gandhi, Mohammed, gods and goddesses of ancient myths, all endured a time of questioning, that time in the wilderness, whether it was the woods or the desert, struggling with some inner conflict. Perhaps it was the suffering of the world, like Buddha, the meaning of life, or some sense of, why am I here anyways? heroes emerge from that wilderness. Power, strength, something that they think is essential. And they have a sense of confidence and assurance that this is why they were born. Now, heroes don't necessarily set out to be heroes. They usually set out to confront some injustice, to be true to something that is growing within them. Jesus never intended to die or to save the world. After his 40 days and nights in the desert, he was wrestling with what he believed in, trying to find the purpose and the meaning that he felt he was born to fulfill. When he left that desert, he went directly to Jerusalem. He was inspired by his conviction that Jews were not living authentically by the principles and the laws of their faith, that they'd given over to assimilation and the Romans' law. So he went directly in the broad light of day, not secretly or safely by the cover of night, to the temple courtyard. And in front of the temple, in front of Romans and Pharisees and Sadducees, he preached. He preached love of God, love of neighbor. He turned over the money changers' tables. He exposed the hypocrisy that he saw in the Jewish leaders. And he did everything he could to undermine the authority of those Pharisees and Sadducees, threatening them, both Jews and Romans. They arrested him, and they executed him for that. Now, I think it's hard for all of us to see people in our daily life who have that strength of conviction. Those people who stand up, turn the tables over, and shout for righteousness. They kind of stir it up in us, and we're not sure we feel safe, not sure what's going on. And there is a tendency to feel a little less adequate, perhaps feel threatened. But mostly, I think, when we see people with that strength of conviction and a sense that they know and they are confident about right and wrong, not in a righteous sort of way, but in that confident, internally, without conflict way. I know for me, it says, so what are you doing with your life? And I can feel a little inadequate, or I can feel like I'm not sure I want to hear that because, oh, there's such a long list of things to do, and don't push me right now. Heroes will do that to us, which is why they often get crucified, physically, reputationally. Think about how many people who have stood up for something in our country, over our history, shown their personhood, and then have met with violent repercussions. Think about the multiple attempts to tarnish presidents or heroes, their spouses, their intimate relationships. We can run down our long list of assassinations. We don't have to look far to see the many heroes we have crucified. Whether it was Martin Luther King, he couldn't believe anything he said and he lost all his power because he was a womanizer. Or Hillary Clinton, she was disqualified and demonized no matter how much of her life had been dedicated to human rights. So those emails were because of some possibly shady real estate. Even Mother Teresa was villainized. All those years, her whole life dedicated to serving the poor. But because she didn't confront the systems in India that keep people poor, she was less than. not deserving of sainthood. She admitted, owned very vulnerably in her memoir, that she had experienced a loss of faith, a dark night of soul. And rather being respected and appreciated for that vulnerability and that transparency, people shot arrows at her. We are all capable of crucifying the hero. If they push one of our buttons, threaten us, or somehow rise some sort of conflict within us. Whenever we waver in our own convictions, we're crucifying that hero that lives within us. These heroes aren't just out there. They're in here, too. Whenever we are not true to what we feel is right or good, either socially or politically, or for us as an individual, we are crucifying or sabotaging the hero. Could be not standing up for a friend when we see them being diminished. It may be giving in on something we think is important because our family wants us to do that, or a friend is going to be disappointed. It takes courage to stick to our convictions, to be one lonely voice. In her poem, Revolutionary Patience, Dorothy Soleil writes this about Jesus, but I think she's writing it about all heroes, those around us, those inside us. He gave answers to questions they didn't really ask, ones they sometimes didn't dare to ask or open their mouths anymore. Not because they hadn't understood, because he was taking from them everything, sacred and safe. And he offered no guarantees. Fire was not sacred to him, or neon, not singing or silence, not fornication or chastity. In his speech, foxes, bread dough, and much mended nets became sacred. The down and out were his proof. And actually, he had as much assurance of victory as any of us do now. Absolutely none. When I was a nurse in ICU, there was a young man, David. He was admitted once or twice a year. He had severe cystic fibrosis, and he had a curvature of his body that prevented his lungs from fully expanding. So the combination, if you know about cystic fibrosis, people have to go through severe physical pulmonary therapy all the time because their lungs are very stiff and they produce a lot of fluid. So they have to be turned upside down and pounded and coughed. But because of the shape of he had a severe scoliosis, because of that, he had a double whammy. He wasn't able to get into those postures that would help soften his lungs or get the fluid out. So, ever he got a cold or some sort of infection, he ended up in the hospital, and he would have to have, you know, suctioning and support, breathing. And this one year, he ended up in ICU three times. And that was unusual. And on the third time, he would be on a ventilator, a breathing machine. And when you're on a breathing machine, you can't just stop it. You have to sort of wean off it, so it might be breathing 12 times for you a minute. So you turn it down to 8 times a minute, and then 6 times a minute. And then the lungs and the body slowly start being able to breathe on their own. And when the body's functioning pretty well and the person's able to breathe and the ventilator's only breathing one or two times a minute, then you can take the tube out of their lungs and they breathe on their own. Well, the first time David went pretty easily. He was weaned off in a few days, normal. Second time he was in ICU, it took longer. We'd get him down to 8 breaths or 6. Then he would start having respiratory distress and wasn't able to pick up breathing on his own, so we'd turn him back up, and then it took weeks to wean him off the ventilator that second time. The third time was even harder. We worried that we were not going to be able to wean him off that machine. And those of us who knew him, you know, whenever people come into ICUs multiple times, usually the same nurses take care of them, so that they have a sense of familiarity, so they know that there's somebody there that knows them as a human being. Because in those ICU beds with all the tubes and the monitors and the noises, it's easy to forget there's a human being there needing your care, your touch, your attention. So I happened to be with David one of those nights trying to wean him off that ventilator. I tried so hard over 8 hours, just go down one breath, go down 2 breaths. Every time I decreased it by 2 breaths, he would start getting anxious and uncomfortable, not able to get enough oxygen. And I left that night knowing he was going to have a hard time ahead. It took us almost a month to wean him and that admission. When he was finally off the machine, he called for his family and his doctors. They said, never again. If I'm admitted next time, do not intubate. Do not put me on the machine. He was 15 years old. And we said, but David, you know what that means? He said, yes. I know probably better than you what that means. So we had his parents come and try to talk to him, his doctors. Everyone did their best to help him understand that it could be different next time, that maybe he wouldn't. And he was absolutely positive, sure, and adamant. Signed all the papers, had his parents sign all the papers. It's called a DNR, do not resuscitate, because it's considered exceptional to be intubated, exceptional beyond normal treatment. So we all knew it. Next time he came in, no matter how hard it was, no matter how hard he was breathing, no matter what was going to happen, we would not intubate. I was on duty the next time he was admitted. Struggle. He had a cold and he was not able to breathe. So we had our orders, keep him comfortable. So I sat there with him and his parents and we watched. And I medicated him as best I could so that he would not have that sense of air hunger, so that he would not suffer. We watched as his oxygen levels got lower and lower. His heart rate got lower and lower until he died. His parents were there. His doctors were there. His siblings were there. And all of us who had loved and cared for him were there. David was a hero. He had spent his time in his wilderness. And he left his wilderness with a conviction of what quality of life meant to him, and that he no longer wanted to live if he could not have that quality of life and would be tied to a machine. He knew that laws did not allow us to stop the machine once a person was intubated and on a ventilator. He knew his only escape was not to be intubated. I still remember him. the look on his face, on his parents' face. David was not interested in being famous. He was not interested in being in the pages of a history book. He wanted to live his life the way he wanted his life to be. It's the same for most heroes. The man who sells his car and only rides his bicycle because he really believes he cannot add one more ounce of carbon dioxide to the environment. He'd rather pedal than be comfortable. There's the woman, actress, who gives up fame and fortune to be a policewoman because she wants to make a difference. There's the youth who ignores all the taunts and ridicule of his friends and keeps dancing ballet. And the grandmother at 80 finally picks up that trumpet, learns to play, and joins a band because she's wanted that all her life. And time is short. Heroes are not perfect. Just like us, they are imperfect human beings, but they have humbly let go of their need to be perfect. They've freed themselves from some social norm that requires them to be anything less than who they are. Easter asks us to follow a hero, to be led by someone who's true, to see that hero's journey as something we all need to embark upon, to open our hearts and our minds to that possibility, to know and discover, is there a hero in you that has been speaking to you that you've been ignoring because maybe it requires something from you that you've not been willing to hear? I would guess each of us has a hero in here, just waiting. Like a song waiting to be written. There's something dormant in us, yearning for us to have the courage to take a risk. Selflessly, maybe. Maybe it's because it feels selfish. Something. Today's a day to be dedicated to that hero. It's a day to be dedicated to the Jews celebrating Passover after their heroic flight from Egypt, to Jesus, whose courageous living and dying has inspired thousands and thousands and millions of people for thousands of years. It's a day to remember all the heroes that are around us, who need our support, our affirmation. Go for it. Do it. You can. I'm right here. And most of all, it's a day to think about that hero in your own heart. Do not sabotage your hero. Follow him or her. Not because you are paid, not because you might see some advantage, not because of the things they have accomplished or not, but simply because of who they are. The man, the woman, the leader, the boss, Christian, Palestinian, Muslim, or Jew. standing up there as the waves hit the rocks, passing out faith and confidence like life jackets. Give them your trust. Give them your effort. Give them your hand. Not because you must, but because they are true. Simply ask you to stay true. Make your peace. Stay true.